he said, patting Jonah's leg.
Ah, and here are your parents.
He smiled warmly at Henry and Beverly in the doorway.
We've just finished. We should have the results sometime tomorrow morning.
Wonderful, Beverly said through a tight, nervous smile. She nodded at me in greeting, then went to Jonah's side.
How are you doing, sweetheart? You look wonderful.
I'm tired, Jonah said, staring at nothing. I'd like to get some rest now.
Oh, Beverly swallowed. But we just got here. Henry said,
He needs to rest.
He took hold of his wife by the shoulders.
Come on, Beverly. Everyone, let's leave him to sleep. We can visit in a few hours.
No, Jonah said.
In the morning. Come back in the morning.
The morning? Beverly's hand crept to the neckline of her cardigan.
Pending the results of several tests, we're going to keep Jonah overnight,
Dr. Morrison said.
Purely as a precaution.
No one moved. Glances darted here and there until the doctor cleared his throat and made a firm gesture toward the door. We all shuffled out, and I waited for Jonah to look at me or call me back. He didn't. In the hallway, the Fletchers asked questions. Theo answered. Dr. Morrison elaborated. I stood in numb silence, listening to the squeak of rubber-soled shoes on linoleum as nurses passed by. Machines beeped alarms, and a voiceover in an intercom paged a doctor.
Casey?
I jumped. They were all staring at me. Beverly's smile was a frozen grimace, while her eyes melted to panic.
You'll stay with Jonah after he's released tomorrow?
Of course, I said, conscious of Theo's eyes on me. In fact, I should go home and pack a few things to stay over. Theo's whiskey-colored eyes met mine. In their imploring gaze, I could hear an echo of an earlier conversation.
You're just going to leave.
I shook my head at him, as if he'd spoken aloud. I'm going to pack a bag, I said. Then I'm coming back. I am. Then Beverly laid her hand on my arm.
You know, Casey, I'd love some coffee. Will you join me?
I sucked in a breath and nodded. Yes, sure. Of course. Her hand still tucked in my elbow, we headed down to the first floor cafeteria. A space I typically associated with school, filled with laughter, shrieks, and loud crosstalk. The hospital cafeteria was sparsely populated and quiet as a library. Only a few people occupied tables, eating in silence. One or two patients in wheelchairs sat with nurses or family members. Beverly took a small table near the window while I bought two cups of coffee. We sat without drinking for a long, silent time, watching little blackbirds hop around the courtyard outside.
It is hard for you to be here, isn't it? Beverly said after a moment. It's hard for all of us, but unlike you, we've known Jonah all of our lives.
Before the virus?
Before the transplant? But you met him only months ago, when he was already sick.
I nodded.
And here you are. She said. He was sick when you met him, but here you are. That's an extraordinary thing, I think, to begin so close to the end.
I'm scared. I set my coffee cup down before my shaking hand spilled it.
I don't think I'm strong enough. May I tell you a story, dear?
Her tone meant, I am going to tell you a story, and you are going to listen. But I welcomed it. I needed the distraction. I needed someone else's words to push out the panicky fear that ricocheted around my thoughts like lightning. When Jonah was born, I changed. Profoundly. Forever. I think that's the way it is with every new mother. You spend 9 months carrying this little being in you, this little stranger, until finally they're born, and you see their face. Her gaze fixed beyond the window. Beyond the little birds, to a moment 26 years ago, when I saw Jonah's face for the first time. It was like seeing someone again after a long absence. Not a meeting, but a reunion. She reached over and briefly patted my hand. I love both of my sons equally, of course.
but they're so different. Theo and I have spent our entire lives getting to know each other, and it's not always been easy. But with Jonah, it's effortless. Beverly's brows knitted together as if she were trying to recall something now forgotten. I've known Jonah before. I know I have. Call it reincarnation or whatever you like. I'm not religious or even particularly spiritual, but I can't help but feel the universe is a vast place and the soul of a human being is infinite, even if the body is temporary. She nodded to herself, certain now. I've known Jonah before, and I know I'll see him again. And that gives me comfort. Not a lot, but some. She turned to me. And you, Casey, you give me comfort. Quite a lot more comfort these days than anything else. I swallowed the jagged lump in my throat, but couldn't move otherwise. Beverly's words wrapped around me and squeezed until all I could hear was her voice and my own heart thudding in my chest. I'm sure you know Jonah had a serious girlfriend in college, she said. Audrey. Yes. Nice girl, but serious. Driven. She was precise about how she wanted her life to be. Beverly's mouth became a thin line, and her voice hardened. I was angry with her for leaving Jonah when he needed her most. Furious. But you want to know something strange? The day after she flew out of the country, the very next day, we got the call that a donor had been matched. Isn't that something? I didn't say anything. No answer was required anyway. Jonah was in surgery when she left. I tried to think of ways to break the news and comfort him. I thought, surely, he'd be devastated, betrayed. Yet, when I thought of their time together, I couldn't recall anything that would qualify as much of a loss. Nothing significant in 3 years. His eyes didn't light up when he looked at her across our dinner table. His voice didn't change when he said her name. He never spoke of her with awe, only facts. Audrey and I are thinking of flying to Cabo. Audrey and I are attending the gallery opening. Audrey and I are having dinner with friends. It was a news report of incidentals. She looked at me, her smile wreathed in a sheepish guilt. That's petty and unkind, but it's true. I understand. His heart isn't well now. But he's much healthier in other ways. Ways I'd always hoped for when he was with Audrey, but never observed. I felt a tightening in my chest, in anticipation of something I needed to hear, something that would save me from my faltering courage. Jonah is always insisting we don't talk about bucket lists, Beverly said. Don't bucket list me, Mom. But mothers, we all have our own list for our children, hopes we have for them, dreams and aspirations. My list is full, and all the things Jonah might never do or experience weigh heavily on me. So heavy. A wedding. Children of his own. She looked at me, her lips trembling, her eyes shining. Falling in love. And being loved in return, that's the heaviest one. But you're here now. And the way he talks about you. Her eyes filled and spilled over. His eyes light up and his voice changes when he says your name. His smile when you walk into a room is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. A tingling warmth began to spread through me. Warming me against the icy chill of fear and grief. Beverly reached out and brushed a tear from my cheek and cupped my chin. And even more beautiful than that, Casey, your eyes light up when my son is near. Your voice changes when you say his name. and the smile you wear when you're looking at him and think no one is watching. Those are gifts I'll never be able to thank you for. To know my Jonah is loved. He'll leave this world loved, won't he? I nodded, tears streaming from my eyes. Yes, I whispered. He's loved, and he'll be loved forever. Beverly's smile shone through her tears like a ray of sun through rain. Wonderful. She patted my cheek and let her hand fall. Cross that off my list, then.
Chapter 40 Jonah 6 weeks. Dr. Morrison laid it out for me. The biopsy results were as I expected. The hardening of the arteries was accelerating, and blood tests showed that the amount of antibodies my immune system had developed against the donor heart was skyrocketing. Heart failure was imminent. I was back on the donor list, with emergency status. But to add insult to injury, the immunosuppressant medications had taken a toll on my kidneys, compromising my chances for a second transplant. In the eyes of the board, I wasn't a favorable candidate. 6 weeks. Not months anymore. Strings of days. Hardly more than 1,000 hours. But within those hours, thousands upon thousands of moments. I stared at the dust motes that danced in a shaft of morning sun lancing from the window. Real, warm light against the harsh fluorescence above me. Dr. Morrison reached across the bed to lay his hand over my wrist. Jonah? I inhaled deeply and let it out in a gusty sigh of relief, as if something heavy had been pressing down on my chest, and now it was gone. The doctor's hand on my arm tightened. Jonah. I'm fine, I said, turning toward him. I'm good, actually. Knowing the brutal truth, it's better. I feel better. Oddly, I could breathe again. The twisted coil of anxiety and fear and dread were fading away. My emotions had been in free fall for a week, when the first bout of unwarranted fatigue hit me just before the gallery opening. Casey said I ran hot and cold, but that barely captured the range of emotions. Hot and cold, angry and guilty, scared shitless, and scrambling to make peace. I'd been cycling through the 5 stages of grief, one after the other, each stage lasting less than a minute, then back to the beginning to start again. I'd had to push everyone away last night. Even push Casey away so I could cope with the inevitability. I looked at Dr. Morrison now, a sense of peace settling over me, and profound relief from the chaotic emotions of the last few days. Would you like to talk to someone? Dr. Morrison asked. A counselor, perhaps? Or the chaplain? I want to lodge a complaint with the medical board, I said. Worst biopsy ever. He chuckled. You've always been one of my favorite patients, Jonah. Always. His laughter quieted. I've already taken the liberty of explaining the situation. Thank you, I said. Not the best part of your job, I take it. Never. But they knew this was a probability, and they're taking it well. As well as can be expected, rather. They're waiting for you outside. Dina and Oscar? I asked. Dr. Morrison nodded. Tanya, too. I nodded. And my girlfriend? He smiled. She's here.
I'm here,
echoed a voice at the door. Casey stood with her hand on the frame. Her face pale, her eyes swollen and bloodshot, her hair a sloppy ponytail falling loose. She looked so damn beautiful, I could hardly breathe. Get lost, Doc. I said. With pleasure. He got up and Casey raced past him toward me, threw her arms around me as best she could across the bed, and buried her face in my neck.
I need to tell you something,
she said, her voice muffled. I need to tell you something too, I pulled her far enough away to look at her, to brush the hair that stuck to the tears on her cheeks like spun glass. I've been such an ass to you, Case. I'm so sorry. I was freaking out. Every minute I was feeling a different emotion, and I love you, she said. I stared at her.
I love you,
she said.
I'm in love with you.
Her words sunk into my heart, not the failing organ in my chest, but the part of me that beat for her, lived for her. I felt saturated with warmth and a happiness I didn't think was possible to experience. Not at a time like this. Not in a place like this. Casey's hand slid against my cheek, her eyes filling.
Your face right now? Never in a million years did I imagine a man looking at me like you're looking at me right now. I love you, she said again. I know you want to protect me, and it's not going to work. I just love you all the more for it. You can't keep me at a safe distance. I told you there is no safe distance. There never was.
You're right, I whispered. There never was. I love you. I love you so much. She laid her head down again, right at the tender spot of my incision. But I didn't care. Love and pain? I wanted all of it. I love you, I said. God, I never thought this would happen to me.
But it did,
she whispered.
It happened, and all we can do now is take care of each other. Live in the little moments, right? Just like we promised. The little moments. We have so many. Thousands upon thousands.
Too many to count, I said. I sniffed hard as my arms went around her and held her close to me as I could, my lips kissing her hair. And this right here, the best moment of my life. We held each other for a long time, and I thought about the choices Casey made to arrive at this moment, to be here with me, knowing it wouldn't last. You're so brave, I said. You're the bravest person I know.
Not me, she said. Brave or scared shitless, I don't have a choice but to love you.
She raised her head and sniffed.
It's all your fault, really. You're so damn lovable.
I laughed shortly. I thought I was a stubborn smartass.
And that too.
She wiped her eyes.
There's a bunch of other people in the hall who want to give you a piece of their minds. Can I go get them?
I nodded, smiled. Yes, all of them. I want all of them. They all came in. My best friends, my parents, my brother. I faced the ring of people I loved best and called to mind this speech I'd rehearsed 100 times in the last 6 months. I thought I'd give it alone, that I'd have to face the inevitable with an empty hand. But Casey Dawson was there. Her fingers entwined with mine. I wasn't alone, and my hand wasn't empty. I cleared my aching throat. Okay, guys. The plan is there is no plan. No trips, no adventures, no bucket lists. This is what I want. To hang out together. Let's have barbecues and breakfasts, a nice dinner at a fancy restaurant. Or a breakfast at Mulligan's? Or cupcakes out of an ATM? Let's talk and tell stupid jokes and laugh a lot and live.
Nods and murmured assents. What I don't want is anyone asking me how I feel 100 times a day, I said. I promise I'll tell you if I need anything. But everything I could ever need or want is right here in this room. You are the loves of my life. I don't want anything but to be together as much as we can. That way, when the time comes.
I swallowed hard, my vision blurring the faces of my people.
You don't have to worry if I was happy, or if I had regrets. I have none.
I looked to Casey, my beautiful girl, and touched her tear-stained cheek.
No regrets. Not one,
she whispered. She kissed her fingertips and touched them to my lips. I took a moment to pull myself together and quickly wipe my eyes.
So that's my big speech. I love you all. And that's it. Let's get the hell out of here.
My audience laughed softly through sniffles or coughs, and it was as if a horrible tension had been lifted. I didn't want macho stoicism or restraint. I wanted their true selves and nothing more. I wanted their moments.
Chapter 41 Jonah.
2 days later, Theo came by my place in the late afternoon.
Where's Casey?
He asked. I handed him a beer from the fridge and took a green tea for myself. She's grocery shopping. Theo nodded, dropping onto the couch.
You're not working tonight?
I quit today, I said, sitting at the other end. Harry asked if I'd been poached by a different limo company.
What did you tell him?
That his was the only limo service I'd ever worked for in my entire life.
Shit, Jonah.
What? I said, grinning. Come on, it was a little funny. Theo snorted, turned his beer around in his hand.
Morrison said your kidneys are shot.
Apparently so, I said. He glanced at me.
And that's what's keeping you from being higher up on the donor list.
I know where this is going.
I'm just saying I could give you a kidney, Theo said. It would match. Your body won't reject it because we're blood. We're brothers. You're my brother.
His voice cracked open. He sat hunched over, his elbows resting on his knees. I waited until he'd pulled himself together and put my hand on his arm. The medication would eventually wreck it, while my body wrecks the second heart thanks to my craptastically rare tissue type. I chucked him on the shoulder. So keep your damn internal organs to yourself. He laughed then, a small laugh, but real.
Fine, but say the word and it's yours. Whatever you want or need. If I can give it to you, it's yours, okay?
I might have a favor to ask you. His head shot up.
Anything. Name it. Give me something.
But the doorknob rattled then. I glanced at it, holding up a finger.
Not now.
Casey came in the door, her arms laden with groceries.
Hey, my two favorite men in the world in one place. Must be my lucky day.
Theo got up to take the bags. She smiled and ruffled his hair. Then they were putting the groceries away, bickering lightly the entire time, while I sat on the couch, my smile turned away where they couldn't see. We ate dinner at my parents' house that night, as we did nearly every other night now. Oscar and Dina and Tanya were always invited. I wanted my people around me as often as possible. Early on, Casey was chatting with Tanya, and Dina was helping my parents plating the dinner. Oscar glanced surreptitiously toward the kitchen and pulled his chair closer to mine. He rubbed his hands up and down his jeans, as if his palms were sweaty.
What's up, man?
I asked. You in the doghouse with Dina? A smile flickered over his lips, then was gone again.
No, but I could be if I don't get this right.
He puffed his cheeks with air and said,
I'm going to ask her to marry me.
I sat back in my chair, my chest flooding with happiness. But Oscar was nervous enough without me getting emotional on him. I feigned total shock.
But Oscar, it's only been 6 years. Are you sure? You don't want to rush into this.
I know, I know. He laughed shortly and ran his hand over his short cropped hair.
I never want to be with anyone else, but I didn't think I needed or wanted some ceremony or piece of paper to make it official. But seeing you with Casey these last weeks.
Oscar's smile froze on his face, his eyes unblinking, as if he could lock his emotion down before it could be revealed.
If you love someone as much as I love Dina, then you hold on to her, right? As long as you can. As hard as you can.
Yeah, man, I said softly. Sounds exactly right. Oscar nodded, and we took a moment. He sipped his beer, and I waited until he was ready to speak again.
So, when's the big day? I asked.
She has to say yes first, Oscar said, clearing his throat.
But that's another thing I wanted to talk to you about. The date. I want you to be there. My best man. Vegas is the capital of quickie weddings.
He stopped at my shaking head and waving hands.
What?
You can't have a quickie wedding with Dina Bukhari, I said. Can you picture our girl in a traditional Iranian dress in a gaudy chapel officiated by Elvis? No, no. She needs the works.
Oscar shifted in his seat. I know it. But her parents are in London, and grandparents in Iran. The visa situation alone is going to take 6 months.
I leaned forward and clapped my friend on his shoulder. It's enough that I know it will happen. I'm happy for you, man. For both of you. Give her the wedding you both deserve. I'll be there in spirit. I chucked his arm. Literally.
Oscar barked a laugh and looked away. I'm gonna miss you, man, he told his beer bottle.
Thanks for saying that, I said, because I knew how hard it was for him to do so.
I'm gonna miss you too,
both of you. And I'm really fucking happy to know you'll take care of each other.
She'll take care of me, Oscar said. I'm going to spend the rest of my life trying not to screw it up.
I laughed, and he laughed, and we got over the emotional hump like a wagon wheel finally lurching over a rock. I didn't need Oscar's tears to know he cared about me, or expect a bunch of sentimental words. I just needed to be around him. And that was enough. After dessert, my father tapped his knife on the side of his wine glass and took a piece of folded paper from his shirt pocket.
This arrived in the mail this afternoon, he said, from Carnegie Mellon. I presumed it was junk mail or a form letter. Good thing I opened it.
He cleared his throat and began to read.
Dear Sir, this letter is to inform you, Jonah Miles Fletcher, that you have achieved the degree of Master of Fine Arts from Carnegie Mellon University, and all honors, benefits, and rights conferred hereto.
There was more, but the table erupted in cheers and applause, drowning out my father. Casey's arms went around my neck, then she pushed her chair back and crawled right in my lap. I held her face, gazed into the blue depths of her eyes. She was so much. I could spend 1,000 full lifetimes and never reach the end of her. She is a universe. I realized in that moment my glass legacy was woefully incomplete. The evening drew to a close. A slow migration began for the door, with hugs and handshakes and drawing on of coats. I pulled Tanya aside.
Yes, Master of Fine Arts, she said. How may I serve you?
Knock it off, I said. I wouldn't have made it if it weren't for you. She waved a hand.
It was nothing.
It was everything. I owe you so much, Tanya. And I... She leaned forward.
Yes?
I grinned. I figured I might as well ask you for one more thing. Tanya snorted a laugh and swatted my arm.
I'm very expensive, you know.
I took her hands in mine. Meet me at the hot shop tomorrow. Her face brightened.
A new piece?
One last piece, I said. The most important piece of my life.
Chapter 42 Casey. I drove us back to Jonah's place with butterflies in my stomach.
What are you smiling about? He asked.
I glanced at him. I keep thinking about your degree confirmation, which was only partially true. I had plans for the evening, and once inside the apartment, I led him to the couch. I have a surprise for you, I said.
Does it involve you being naked?
Maybe, I said over my shoulder on the way to the bedroom. Give me a minute. I pulled a box I'd stowed under the bed. It held a dozen pillar candles, and I set them up around the room. On his dresser and nightstand, two on the windowsill. Once I flipped the lamp off, the room glowed with orbs of soft yellow light. Task done, I called for Jonah to join me. At the door, he stopped and took in the candles. Then me. He leaned his forearm high on the doorframe, his eyebrow arched. You're not even remotely naked. Not yet, I said, moving to him and running my hands over his t-shirt. I know we have to take it easy, so I've been doing some research.
Research? Jonah said, wringing his arms around my waist. There's an erotic word. What have you been researching?
Tantric sex, I whispered. Then a laugh erupted out of me. Oh my God, it sounds cheesy as hell, but I read up on it, and I think it'll be good for us. Safe. Dr. Morrison didn't exactly forbid sex, but gone were the days of Jonah taking me up against a wall in a fit of unrestrained passion. We'd only slept together twice since he was released from the hospital, and despite our efforts to take it easy, both times, he'd been scarily out of breath. It was as if the CAV had sped up, like a boulder that had slowly tipped over the side of a steep hill and was now rolling and gaining speed with every passing moment. Want to give it a go? I asked.
As if I'd say no to you.
He reached for me and we kissed, undressing. Come sit on the bed, I told him. Lotus position.
I don't speak tantra.
Cross-legged. He sat in the middle of the bed as instructed. His candlelit eyes went wide and heavy with desire as I crawled onto him. I sat in his lap, wrapped my legs around his waist. But I didn't take him inside me, which somehow felt more intimate than if I had.
I like this,
he said against my neck. His mouth moved over my chin.
Kiss me.
Not yet, I said. We have to go through all the steps first.
Steps? Is there a manual I could consult?
Stop laughing.
Right, sorry. Tantric sex is serious business. Step one is?
Step one. Hold me comfortably and look into my eyes. Nowhere else. Jonah rested his hands on my thighs, and I held his arms that held me. I stared into the rich brown velvet of his eyes. For all of 3 seconds. We both broke down laughing, our bodies restless with nerves. We tried again, laughed again, and kept trying. Gradually, the giggles retreated. I relaxed and felt myself falling into his gaze. With every blink, my memory flipped up a moment we'd shared. Thousands upon thousands. From the first time I woke up on his couch to now. With the candlelight flickering around our bodies. Now what? He said softly. Now, we share each other's breath, I said, moving closer so my lips brushed his. Find the rhythm. It happened quickly. Within moments, we were breathing for one another, breathing as one. He inhaled what I exhaled. I breathed in what he let go, filling my lungs with him. The world and its needs drifted away. Time ceased to exist. Only now. This moment. And I didn't need anything but what he gave me. With every breath, my thoughts fell away. As I drifted deeper in the beauty of his eyes, I felt myself cease to exist. No me. No him. Only us. Our skin melted together, creating a third presence, sharing the air, sharing our bodies. His grip on my hips tightened, and he lifted me onto him. A break in our breath's rhythm as he slid inside me.
Yes.
His mouth shaped the word without a sound. Yes. This. I pushed forward, my breasts pressed against his scarred chest. My arms wrapped around his back. My legs around his hips, taking him in as deeply as I could. Jonah slipped one arm around my waist. His other hand slid against my face, his thumb brushing over my lips. Our breathing fell in sync again. We didn't move but to breathe. You, he whispered. You. All I knew or felt or saw. You. The whole world in my arms. The unfolding depths of his eyes. The hard, heavy warmth of him inside me. A soft, pulsing pleasure that grew with each moment until it began to move us. Our lips met in a gentle, deep kiss. Inhale, I rolled my hips back. Exhale, I pushed them forward. Jonah mirrored, rocking his pelvis against mine. A tide, ebbing and flowing. Ocean waves falling gently on the shore as we kissed and shared breath. Eyes open, never breaking contact. The heavy ache of pleasure took on more weight, grew more intense. Case, he whispered. I threaded my fingers through his hair, adding new points of contact, new connections. I felt him in every pore, every breath and beat of our hearts. I'd never experienced anything like this in my life. He was a universe. My love for him was just as boundless. Tears filled our eyes as our bodies rolled and slid, driving toward a bittersweet crescendo of pleasure. Tears for love, for loss, for the weeks we had, and the years he didn't, for the joy and laughter, for the heartache and grief, for this lonely man and the lost woman he'd rescued, for us. And the rapidly approaching time in which there would be only me. I closed my eyes, sank into his kiss, and gave in to the climax. It rose up and rolled through us. Gentle, slow motion swells instead of a crashing wave. Look at me, he whispered. Don't stop. I opened my eyes. I love you, Casey. Jonah. My eyes saw only him. My breath was for his lungs. My tears dampened his skin. My hands were made to run through his hair. I was born to feel him all over me, forever. Jonah. My Jonah.
Chapter 43. Jonah. I spun the blowpipe back and forth. The glass on the end was the size of a child-sized bowling ball, but felt 100 times heavier. My breath was a shallow wheeze in and out of my chest. I couldn't take deep breaths anymore, unless I was sitting down. Tanya! She took the pipe from my hand as I sat heavily on the bench and set it on the rails. I resumed rolling and shaping. My arms felt like lead as I took up the jacks and sawed at the neck. Tanya was there, her hands covered in thick mitts, cupped beneath the sphere.
Stop if you have to, she told me.
I didn't answer. I didn't have the breath, and I wouldn't have stopped anyway. The glass globe cut loose from the pipe, and Tanya caught it deftly in her hands. She carried it to the kiln, but it was too big for her to hold while opening the door. Using the blowpipe as a cane, I pushed myself to stand and moved as fast as I could across the 10 feet. I opened the kiln door, and Tanya carefully laid the glass inside while I slumped against the wall, gasping for breath. She tore off the mitts to set the cooling timer, then took me by the arms.
Tell me.
We had a standing agreement, me and my circle. They didn't ask if I needed help, so long as I promised to tell them if I did.
I'm okay, I said,
and it was true. My heart jackrabbited in my chest, irregular and fast, but it was calming down. My lungs sucked in more and more air, and finally I was able to push myself off the wall. Tanya hooked her arm under mine and helped. Together we looked through the kiln glass door.
It's done, I said.
It had taken 2 hours per day for 4 days, but it was done.
It's the best thing you've ever made,
Tanya murmured. Because loving her is the best thing I've ever done. We shut everything down, cleaned up the work table, and headed for the sliding front doors. I stopped and turned, taking in the space that had felt like a second home to me.
Did you forget something?
She asked. No, I'm just saying goodbye. Remembering. I looked over at my assistant. Tears were in her eyes. You'll take care of the last piece? She nodded.
It's been an honor and a privilege working with you.
Likewise, Tanya. I only wish I could stick around to see your brilliant career.
So do I, damn it,
she said fiercely and threw her arms around my neck.
Though I don't know about brilliant.
I did. She had applied to the Chihuly studio in Seattle. I knew Dale's rep had received my letter of recommendation, and I knew they were extremely enthusiastic about Tanya's work. I knew they'd be notifying her shortly to schedule a round of interviews and studio time. I could have told her what to expect, but some moments, like her opening that letter from the studio, were meant to be lived in as they happened. I knew that too.
Chapter 44. Casey. One morning, Jonah was slow to get out of bed, and then only made it to the kitchen before stopping to rest his hands on the counter, catching his breath. He spent most of the day in the chair in the living room. The speed of his decline terrified me. Seconds were slipping by, taking our moments with them. I fought to hold on to them, to make something of them that was more than fear and grief and agony. Losing Jonah was agony. And if I slowed down to think about it, even for a moment, it would drown me. I had to keep moving, stay ahead of it, for Jonah's sake and for mine. I made phone calls. I prepped his medications and made our meals. I took his showers with him, helped him wash and shampoo, then helped him out. I made a flirtatious game of it. But aside from a few warm kisses, Jonah's body was shutting down. I'd quit my job at Caesars weeks ago and was living off the last of the rapid confession money. These funds were dwindling too, but there was zero chance of me leaving Jonah now. If I lost my apartment, so be it. For now, I was living at Jonah's place, and later, the nebulous later. I had plenty of friends in Las Vegas I could crash with until I got back on my feet. As if the universe were testing me, Jimmy Ray called one afternoon and offered me everything I could possibly want. A new contract with RC, an additional solo contract to write and produce my own album, and an advance that would have left me set for years. The label is desperate for you, he said. His voice was hearty, but I could practically smell his desperation through the phone. Ella's a good girl, but she's not you. Have you been reading the press? The fans want you back. We want you back. I wanted to laugh at the ridiculousness. Jimmy schmoozing like a used car dealer or a carny at a fair. What he offered was so shallow and plastic compared to what I had with Jonah. For all the pain that was coming, and God help me, it was going to be an avalanche. It was worth it. Jonah was worth everything. No thanks, Jimmy. I heard a gasp and a stutter. No thanks? You're going to turn it all down for what, the limo driver? Yes. Listen, kitten, this is my Hail Mary pass. I don't want to rub salt in a wound, but Lola says he's dying, and you're going to choose him over everything we're offering? No, I said. I'm not choosing anything. There is no choice. There never was. Silence never sounded so good. I hung up. The next morning, I checked my bank balance on my laptop with one eye squinched shut, mentally preparing to see a bunch of zeros, or red digits with a big fat negative sign in front of them. Instead, my balance read an almost even $5,000. A deposit had been made from a Wynn Galleria holding account. I found Jonah resting on the couch, watching When Harry Met Sally. I'd fully converted him to the Church of 80s cinema. I stood in front of him, planted my hand on my hips, and tried my best to raise one eyebrow without help from my finger. He squinted at my feeble attempt.
You either have a really bad headache, or you're trying to read something printed a mile away.
$5,000 mysteriously appeared in my checking account. Jonah's smile fell.
I'm sorry it's not more.
More? I sank down on the couch beside him. What is it? Where'd it come from?
It's what's left from the gallery sale after I paid off my parents' mortgage and gave Theo enough for a down payment on his own tattoo shop.
His own shop? Holy shit, you're a rainmaker.
I believe in him,
Jonah said simply.
I believe in you. The $5,000 isn't much, but it's so you can keep living here, get a new job, and keep working on your album. Or whatever it is you want to do.
I don't need it, I said, my throat filling with tears. I can figure something out.
I know you can,
he said.
You can stand on your own. But if I can make it easier for you, I'm going to do that.
I shook my head, blinking back the tears. I couldn't cry too much these days. Once I started, I feared I might never stop. Jonah drew me down, and I lay curled up with him, my back against his chest. On the TV, the ball had dropped on New Year's, and Harry rushed to the party, to Sally, to declare his love for her, because he wanted the rest of his life to start as soon as possible. My life started on this couch, I whispered, the moment I woke up that morning. He nodded against my head.
Mine too, Case. Mine too.
That night, we lay in bed together, kissing softly. My hands roamed his skin, trying to memorize his every line and contour, hoping, wanting the low flame of desire to spark and catch fire.
Honey, I'm so tired,
he said. That's no trouble, I said, smiling wide, endeavoring to make my shaky voice seductive and playful. I ran my hands down his chest, toward the waistband of his sleep pants. Perhaps a little oral stimulation? Jonah shook his head against the pillow.
Not tonight, Case.
It was the 10th, not tonight, in a row, and the smile slipped off my face like the flimsy mask it was. Not tonight. But behind Jonah's eyes, behind the warmth and sadness and the infinities of thoughts behind them, I read what he was really saying. Not this night. Not any night. Not ever again. Okay, I said, my breath tight in my chest that suddenly weighed 1,000 pounds. Tears burned my eyes, and I was too slow to turn away and too weak to keep them from spilling over.
I hate this part the most,
he said.
Shh. I'm sorry.
No. Do not be sorry, Jonah. Being sorry means you wish we hadn't happened. And I'm not sorry for that, are you? He shook his head, his own eyes full.
These last months have been everything.
Everything. I have no regrets. But I'm going to cry a little right now, okay? I can't help it. I can't lose you, is what I wanted to say. But I was going to lose him. And so I cried, and he held me until I stopped. I wiped my eyes, then pulled off my shirt and unclasped my bra.
What are you doing?
He murmured in the sleepy, measured voice he had to use now to say anything, to have enough air to speak. Want to be close to you. I snuggled up tight against him. Jonah held me close and fell asleep quickly. He was so terrifyingly tired all the time. But I lay awake for long hours, my strong heart beating against his failing one. I willed whatever strength I had into him. I tried to visualize a current of energy, vibrant and gold, emanating from me and seeping into him, making him better, making him well. Don't leave me. The next morning, he woke up short of breath, hardly able to sit up without help. Our eyes met, and he brushed his fingers along my cheek.
It's time.
I thought I'd collapse against him then, sobbing and wailing, letting the grief pour out of me. God knew I wanted to. But then I'd have to take him to the hospital, and this last moment, here in our bed, would have been wasted in crying. Instead, I kissed him like a lover, deep and long, and with everything I had, with every ounce of infinite love that dwelt in me. I kissed Jonah Fletcher with all of my heart, and with every piece of my soul that would love him forever. Chapter 45. Casey. They set Jonah up in a private room. Steps from the elevator, the chapel, vending machines, and the restrooms. The circle of friends and family, the seven I called us, had access to everything we needed, allowing us to camp out in the waiting room. No one left for longer than a few hours at a time, and checked back in via text every few minutes. Is he okay? Any news on a donor? What does the doctor say? The answer stayed the same for the first 24 hours. Jonah was resting, no news of a donor heart, and the doctor said he wasn't likely to get one. Jonah's kidneys, ravaged from the medications, were failing, and he was put on dialysis, which made him all but ineligible for a second heart transplant.
If you let me give him one of mine,
Theo said. He looked terrible, dark rings under bloodshot eyes. He hadn't had a decent night's sleep in weeks.
It wouldn't have helped, Dr. Morrison said. His antibody count has always been much too high. The CAV is too relentless.
So they just took him off the list?
Not at all, Dr. Morrison said. Jonah was never removed from the donor list. But if a new heart were available, we would have heard already. I'm so sorry.
He turned to address the seven.
Right now, the best thing for Jonah is to remain comfortable and spend time with you.
He's not in pain, is he?
Henry asked.
No,
Dr. Morrison said gently.
And I will do everything in my power to ensure he stays that way. I promise.
Over the next 2 days, we crowded into his room, talking and reminiscing, laughing at his bedside and stepping out to cry in the hallway. By the third day, when Jonah was struggling through the minutes, some instinctive realization took hold of the group. It was time to say goodbye. Tanya, Oscar, and Dina took turns alone in his room. Then the seven became four. The Fletchers, and me. How are you? I asked Theo. We slouched on chairs in the waiting area while Henry and Beverly sat with Jonah.
My brother's dying, and there's not a goddamn thing I can do about it. That's how I am.
I stared at my hands through a beat of silence.
How are you?
He asked. I can't really sit over here by myself anymore, I said. Can I hold your hand? Theo moved to sit beside me. His large, strong hand engulfed mine. I studied the tattoos that snaked around his forearms. Your designs?
Some.
What drew you to tattooing? My voice sounded like I'd been screaming for hours, tear-soaked and hoarse.
Permanence,
Theo said.
Tattoo is art that bites deep, leaves blood. Can never be washed away. It stays.
He looked down at me with his whiskey-colored eyes.
You stayed.
I smiled. I want a tattoo from you.
Name it.
Not sure yet. I'll think about it. He nodded, and we waited, hand in hand. The Fletchers came out then, Beverly looking frail and delicate, Henry ramrod straight, stoic and stiff, his grief boiling below the surface.
Theo, dear, Beverly said in a tremulous voice. He wants you.
Theo went in, and I sat wedged between the Fletchers, holding her hand, resting my head against his shoulder. They weren't my parents, but I loved them, and I felt loved by them in a way I never had from my own. Even Henry's reserved affection was a million times warmer than my father's. I hadn't thought of him since San Diego, or my mother. They'd never met Jonah, and now they never would. Their loss, I thought bitterly. But in the next instant, that bitterness morphed into fierce pride and even joy. I had known Jonah Fletcher. I had been loved by him. And it was a privilege I would carry with me for the rest of my life. Theo emerged, looking bewildered. He gave me a strange look I couldn't define, then said,
"He's asking for you."
Jonah lay on the hospital bed, reclined as he had in his chair in his apartment. A nasal cannula ran beneath his nose, delivering oxygen, but his breathing was erratic. He took little sips of air, his chest jerking instead of rising and falling. His dark eyes were stark against his pale face, his thick silken hair now thin and brittle. Tubes and wires ran into his right arm, held there with white tape. The dialysis machine churned continuously from beside the bed. Another monitored his heart. I didn't understand the blood pressure numbers, but the jumping, electric tick of his pulse monitor sounded fast and agitated in my ears. "You sent for me?" I said, as I sank into the chair next to the bed. I leaned my elbows on the mattress and took his hand in mine.
"I'm extracting promises,"
he said, between short, shallow breaths.
"No one can refuse a guy in my position."
I tried to find a clever comeback, but I had none. Only the howling wish he was in any other position than this one. "Do you want anything?" I asked. "Anything at all?"
"No, Case. Just you. Here with me."
I nodded. "I'm here. I'm not going anywhere." He smiled with a weak twitch of his lips.
"And that promise."
"What is it?"
"Promise me," Jonah said.
His voice was weak and soft, but a desperate intensity wreathed his gaze. "What, baby?"
"Love again."
I stared a moment, then shook my head. He fought to get a breath in.
"There's more to you than us, Case. Please, don't hold yourself back. You have too much to give. So much love, Casey. So much."
My chest tightened. "I can't even think about it right now, Jonah."
"In time,"
he said.
"Promise me, if you find someone."
"Never." His fingers wove with mine.
"No, you will. Love him. Love him with everything. Like you loved me. Love him more."
His eyes closed.
"I'm so happy, Case. Never like this in my life. It's a gift, you know?"
I ran the backs of my fingers along his face. "I know." His eyes opened slowly.
"Make someone else feel like I do right now. Okay? Promise."
I wanted to shake my head and tell him I couldn't do it. Could never do it. I would never again feel for anyone what I felt for him.
"I love you, Case,"
he said in between shallow little hiccups of air.
"I love you so much. Promise."
"I love you, Jonah. And..." "Okay, yes, I promise." Tears spilled over my cheeks as I nodded. "I promise." His eyes closed again, his body settled back into the pillows, and his next inhale seemed smooth, the exhale relieved. The corners of his mouth lifted, then stretched further. He smiled. He was beautiful then. Peaceful, serene. "I need to tell you something," I said. "I know you're tired. Just rest and listen." Still smiling, he nodded.
"Still here."
"I love you," I said. "You're the best thing to ever happen to me. I wouldn't give back one second of our time together. Not one."
"Case,"
he breathed. His hand in mine shook, trying to rise. I brought it up for him and pressed my cheek into his palm. His fingertips rubbed slowly in my hair. "My heart's breaking," I said. "And I'm so happy. You make me so happy. Your love's made me strong. You've made me a better person." Sobs like little knives in my throat. Words trying to dodge around them. "Being loved by you, Jonah, is the greatest honor of my life." He gazed at me, the tears spilling down his pale face.
"God, you so beautiful,"
he whispered.
"So beautiful. Don't want to stop looking at you, but tired."
"Sleep," I said, drawing the edge of the sheet up. "I'll be here when you wake up. I'll be here the whole time." I bent over him, kissed his lips gently, and held his face in my hands. "I love you."
"I love you, Case. Love you."
His eyes closed, and within a minute, he slept. I rested my aching head on the bed beside him, exhausted beyond anything I had ever known, wrung out and empty of everything. No joy, no pain, no hope, and no regret. I'd left no word unspoken. My head by Jonah's hip, I sank into sleep, where I dreamed I was floating in a sea of glass, suspended and weightless. Beauty surrounding me in ribbons of colors and swirls of light. Quiet. Peaceful. Happy.
Chapter 46. Jonah. Casey. No regret. Only love. Only you. I could see a receding shore beneath a sky full of stars. Millions upon millions of stars. Millions upon millions of moments. All of them with her name. I loved her more than I had ever loved anyone. And was loved in return. The knowledge was safe in me. Locked in my heart. And when I stopped fighting it and let my eyes fall closed, I couldn't see the shore anymore. But I knew it was there. A wind whispered, like a breath, my final breath. I will love you forever.
Chapter 47. Casey. 4 days later. I sat on my bed, still wearing my black dress, though the funeral was long over. My hand clutched a balled-up tissue, damp with tears and blackened with mascara. From the bits and pieces I could remember, it had been a beautiful service. Friends from Carnegie came, along with professors and instructors. A representative from the Chihuly studio brought an exquisite glass sculpture of white lilies for Jonah's mother, and a note of condolence from Dale himself. "The world had lost a vibrant new talent too soon," he wrote. A minister spoke. Dina recited a poem. And everyone took turns speaking about Jonah, telling funny stories, sharing poignant memories. Over and over, I listened to people tell how he made them laugh, how he brought out the best in everyone, how his belief in them made them brave. I think that was me. Afterward, Beverly came over to where Theo and I stood together, a small brass urn in her hands. The desert. At night. Under the stars, she said, pressing the urn into Theo's hands. It's what he wanted. But I can't do it. I can't. I can't either, I thought, sitting alone on my bed. I don't want to be here without you. I need you. Only a knock at my front door roused me to move. Tanya stood outside, still in her funeral black, her eyes red-rimmed. In her arms was a cardboard box. I can't stay, she said. I leave for Seattle tomorrow and still have a ton of packing. She put the box in my hands. But this is for you. What is it? Jonah made it for you. I helped, but he did the work. God, his artistry. He was a master. He breathed his life into his glass. I'll never work with anyone better. We hugged goodbye, both of us stiff with grief, both knowing if we lingered here, we'd collapse. We made a hurried plan to see each other when she came back in a week. If she came back. I took the box to the couch and set it on my coffee table to open it. Inside was a sphere of glass, about the size of a cantaloupe, heavy and dark. Crystal stars smattered against the dark blues and black. A planet, red, green, and black, hovered in the center, surrounded by swirls and spirals of light in pale blue that seemed to possess their own illumination. A piece of the night sky trapped in an orb. The universe, I murmured, cradling the orb on my lap, running my hands over its smooth surface. Its exquisite beauty caught up my breath. Afraid I would break it, I searched in the box for some kind of stand to set it on. A note lay at the bottom of the box. Carefully, I set the sphere aside and drew out the folded paper with shaking hands. My eyes filled when I saw his handwriting. I touched the words, hearing his voice speaking behind every pen stroke. Casey, if you're reading this, it means I'm hopefully at some celestial diner, stuffing my face with bacon and french fries and drinking real beer. When I'm done, I'll tip the waiter in rolls of nickels. Because anyone can hit a jackpot, right? You just have to play. And you have to live. You taught me that. My life was stale and shuttered until you. Colorless and drab until you. I kept my broken heart to myself until you came and took it in your gentle hands and breathed life into it. Into me. You taught me how to find life within every moment. You healed my heart, Casey, when nothing else could. This ball of glass and fire is as close as I'll come to showing what you've been to me. I tried to put everything you are and everything I feel for you all in one place. But capturing the enormity of you is impossible. It's not enough. Nothing will ever be enough. You are a universe, Casey. I kept waiting to find the end of your love and beauty, the end of your generous heart. I never did. I never will. I don't know how or why you chose me to love. And you did choose. You could have walked away and saved yourself. Instead, you chose to stay. And so saved me. That's my legacy. I loved you and was loved by you. I'm at peace, and I hope to God I gave you the same happiness you gave me. I hope the love we have outweighs the pain when I'm gone. Live fully. Sing loudly. Share your beauty with this world and know I'm watching over you from the next. All my love to you, Casey. My angel. My heart. Your Jonah. I held the letter to my heart, protecting it from the tears dripping off the edge of my chin. That the love we have outweighs the pain. I felt myself nodding as a smile spread beneath my tears. If I had to do it all again, I would. I wouldn't change one minute. Except to tell him sooner I loved him. and that being with him was no more a choice than eating or breathing. No regrets, Jonah, I told him, my hand skimming over the peace of the universe. And I will love you forever.
Epilogue. Casey. Theo drove us west, into the heart of the desert on County Road 20555. No headlights passed us. No street or city lights, or even the moon dimmed the star-filled sky. Not the diamond dust canopy of Great Basin, but hundreds of silvery pinpricks in the midnight canvas above us. We were silent on the drive through the winding terrain, low, dark hills rising up around us on all sides. This looks good, Theo said, as the headlights illuminated a tiny rest stop overlooking the desert. In the starlight, the land was an undulating plateau of indistinct shapes stretching out for miles. Theo parked on the dirt shoulder, then came around to open the passenger door for me. I held the urn secure in my arms, its brass weight warm from my skin, and heavy. Outside, the wind gusted, cold and sharp. The headlights cast yellow cones of light around us, glinting off the urn as Theo took it gently from my arms. Neither one of us spoke while he removed the lid and let the wind take the ashes. By the light of the truck, I watched them lift into the sky where they were blown into wisps, like smoke, and then vanished. I felt untethered, as if the wind would take me too, lift me up and tear me into a million little pieces and fling them against the sky. Then his hand closed around mine.
Stay here,
Theo said softly. I felt his pulse beat through his palm, warm and strong against mine, keeping me from blowing away, keeping me whole. My fingers tightened around his as we stared toward the edge of the universe, where Jonah now lived. I will.
This concludes Full Tilt by Emma Scott, narrated by Nelson Hobbs and Caitlin Kelly. Copyright 2016 by Emma Scott. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Emma Scott and was produced in the year 2017 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.